Hey guys, welcome into another episode of From the Wing. I am Christian Clark, the Pelicans beat writer for NOLA.com and The Advocate. Was at the Blender to watch the Pelicans lose to the Miami Heat.
Really?
First time in a while. They had been there. They had coming off this five-game road trip, and it was not pretty, Adam. It was not.
Looked like it was Dwayne Wade and LeBron James and Chris Bosh that came.
I think those guys were in a Heat uniform.
That's what it felt like. Weird, terrible. That was booty. Entirely healthy Miami Heat for the first time in a while. In a team that's been playing together for most of them for quite a few years, and a system they've been coaching for over a decade. And you're coming off of a really long road trip. That seems like a really, really big formula for a loss when you're not featuring Zion and BI. So it looked exactly like what you might have guessed. It was just never close. I think the closest they got it to after like the game like got underway, like the closest they got it to was 12. And it was just back-breaking threes. Defense wasn't good. Couldn't dribble. Couldn't pass. Zone ate us alive.
They shot the hell out of it from 2-2. And it was bad defense by the Pelicans. But
Bam got off to a super hot start. He just took it right at us. And, you know, if there's one criticism of Bam that you levy is like, you know, as one of those tweener centers, that's a very switchy guy. Like, can you lean on him offensively when you need him? And tonight they could. Jimmy Butler wasn't even trying to do much in the beginning. They were just feeding Bam, and Bam was punishing the hell out of us.
Yeah, I thought Bam was the best player on the floor in this game. Really got it done on both ends. I mean, 26 and 11 of 15 shooting. Got a lot of those pick and roll. I'm just going to pop to the mid-range. They hit him there. He made him. Defensively, he was all over the floor. He's a very, very good player. I'm still, like, if I was a team that had to face the Heat in the playoffs, I still would be a little bit worried. I know they haven't had a great season, but I wouldn't want to play them in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think the concern for them, like, I may not want to play them in the playoffs, but I feel fine about, like, if I'm the Bucks, if I'm the Bucks or the Celtics, I feel all right. But if I'm the 76ers, I might be little nervous just because of the backcourt track record in the playoffs.
Their offense has sucked this year. They're 24th in offense coming into this game. It's been a huge.
They don't score a lot of points. Yeah. They don't score a lot of points, but they don't turn the ball over. And we start the game by like turning it over five times in 10 possessions. Like, it was just nasty stuff.
Yeah, I don't really have that many notes from this game. You know, it was probably the most poorly played game the Pelicans had this season. They're coming off a long road trip. They didn't have Zion or BI. That's starting to catch up with them a little bit. You know, a lot of these role players, you can ask them to play kind of above their level for only so long, I think. I don't know. I don't really have a ton of notes. I definitely wanted to talk about a story I dropped on Monday about Brandon Ingram. Did you write something? I did. And what's funny, man, if you actually read the story, I didn't even think it was that controversial. Like, it was crazy to
really
me
isn't.
That was, like, if you read the 600 words in the story, the reaction it elicited in some corners, people were so mad. And it's like, you guys were mad about this, where I'm like, hey, Brandon Ingram has done all these good things for the franchise for the first 3 years. He deserves to be held up as a face of the franchise. I really do believe that. Like, all, and then I was like, but he misses a lot of games. Over the past two seasons, he's missed 44% of New Orleans' regular season games, and there is frustration within the organization starting to mount. It is not a new thing. People were mad about, you know, the extended time he missed with minor injuries last season. And I think we've even talked about it on this pod before this issue cropped up, and it's kind of reared its head again. You know, this has been the worst one yet. This was the 26th game in a row Brandon has missed with a toe contusion. That's just a lot. It's just a lot. And yeah, people are frustrated, and I understand why.
But you're not supposed to tell us that, Christian. You're supposed to leave it alone and just like not say anything. And then we get mad about how the team isn't telling us about his injury or giving us updates when there's not really much to say because it's up to him.
Can you imagine if he played for the Knicks and he'd been out 7.5 weeks with a toe contusion and Tibbs had said like every week he'd been like, well, he's getting better. He's getting better. He's getting better. Like what would the tabloids look like there? Like
that's one of those things where like, we're very much a small market in a young NBA town. Our fan base doesn't get how bad it would be. How just like how absolutely crushed he'd be getting in any market bigger than this or for a franchise that had like a longer track record of success, it would be a bloodbath and it wouldn't have been this week. It had been 3 weeks ago. So it's like, you know, there'd have been questions like I'm a huge EPL fan, obviously, like, you know, I'm, you know, Captain Tottenham Hotspur. Their media, that there's so much media covering the team and the fan bases are so intense that at the first glimpse of a mistake, jobs are called for, credibility is questioned. Like every single time somebody breathes wrong, they're in lieu of getting fired. We have it like absolutely made that we don't get the level of negativity that you could get in a different market. Cause this wasn't anything. This is like, clearly everybody would be frustrated. It has been a long time. There is no intense injury. People are trying to assign injuries that have not been said or recorded or reported and assign those to him and create this leeway. Realistically, I still have the dude as the background on my phone. Like, I love the guy. I love the team. I'm a fan. I can't debate that he has missed more than your average game for like every injury he's ever had. And that this one happens to not match up with like anyone who's had this kind of injury before. He's missing a quarter of the season and we need him really bad. And I've been saying this since Zion got hurt. Like, this is the time you need him really bad. This stretch is bad. We're 3-7 in our last 10. It doesn't get better. We have the Nuggets. We have the Bucks. It's a lot of away games still. A lot of back-to-backs. This is not a good stretch for him to be gone. And we just don't, you know, we don't know.
I've gotten a lot in the past 2 days is, well, is Brandon medically cleared? And I think that kind of gets into this semantics game. But here's what I'll say. If Brandon, I can say this definitively. If Brandon had decided 3 weeks ago, he feels like he's ready to play, he would have been back in the court. If he decided 2 weeks ago, he would have been back in the court. If he decided before, you know, at any time on that road trip, he would have been back in the court. He pretty much just needs to get a practice under his belt, go through a stay fit game. That's, you know, after shoot around, the Pelicans have these like 5-on-5 games. Basically, it's a way for guys to get a little running. Basically, like he just needs to do that stuff and, you know, decide that he's good to go. So it is pretty much has been his decision and it's been his decision for a while. And you know, I saw some people say like, well, didn't we learn our lesson from Zion last year? This is a completely different situation than Zion last year. There was structural damage to Zion's foot. He had a broken foot. The team, even when he tried to come back in the spring, remember when he posted the video of him dunking in the practice facility to try to pressure the team to let him play. Remember when his stepfather did an interview with the Baton Rouge radio station to try to put pressure on the team to play? The team did not back down. The team felt he is not ready to play. We are not going to allow him to play this spring. They didn't. He was not medically cleared until May after the Pelicans were eliminated from the playoffs. This is a completely different situation. They've x-rayed B.I.'s foot. They've given him an MRI. Structurally, the team believes there's nothing wrong with it.
It's literally the inverse. Yeah. It is the exact opposite. They are not doing anything to keep him off the court when Zion was the exact opposite. He was trying to force his way on while still damaged. And they're like, no, hold up. It is the exact opposite. It is the exact opposite of that. It is not the same as Desmond Bane. This doesn't have a comp. This does not have a reasonable comp for somebody that is just experiencing foot pain with no structural damage and is missing a quarter of a season. We don't have a player's name to summon to say, like, this has happened before. So, like, this is reasonable.
Yeah, if it had been a toe sprain like Desmond Bane was dealing with, you know, then it's a much, I think, murkier issue. But it's not a toe sprain. They checked him out from that from day one. It was never a toe sprain. They've designated it as a toe contusion from day one. I guess I have some thoughts about just like the general state of NBA media too. Like, I feel like so much NBA media is afraid to just tell the truth too. That, like, sometimes when you do, people just lose their minds. I felt this was like a very level-headed, like, here's what's going on thing with sourcing from the team. Like, you know, I saw some people say, well, he just made that up too. It's like, no, like, having conversations like every week with a bunch of people in and around the team, like, they've been expressing these thoughts for a while now. Like, that's where that came from. Like, I just feel like people freak out when it's like, oh my God, this guy's like actually telling the truth and like not just going with, you know, like the line the team wants you to go with. Like, no.
Imagine.
There are some people who actually care about the truth.
Yeah. So this is where my rant comes in. Look, social media and politics has done a number on what it means to be a journalist versus a blogger. You are somebody who went to J school and works for a newspaper. That is different than like me deciding I'm going to start writing a blog about the Pelicans and then I'm going to go work my way in and I need to do people favors because I don't have a way in otherwise. And so like I buddy up with people. And so like I have the, you know, maybe I get tight with one player. And so everything I write about him is glowing. Like, this isn't that. There's a difference between those people and people that are journalists. You actually abide by like the rules of sourcing. You do care about your credibility and like how things get reported. And I think it's been pretty damn evident, but like on the internet, people don't know how to parse between that anymore. So they just make it all the same thing. They look at you and they judge it the exact same way they would random blogger on like whatever website, you know, mom's notes on pelicans.com. Like, they treat it exactly the same way. If they don't want to hear it, they just discredit it rather than acknowledging that, like, hey, this isn't fun to hear, but like, it's not a great situation. It's just the truth. Like, you don't have to freak out. You don't have to jump off a deep end. BI's not dead, but you also don't have to like blow up the article and be like, oh, it's a hit piece. Whatever. Like, it's just the God's honest truth of what's happening. And why are you shocked that the team is frustrated at this point when one of their best players and like the guy that really helped them drive through the end of last season in that little playoff run is unavailable and there's nothing they can do. Like, of course,
isn't this more than a quarter of the entire season with a pretty minor injury? I mean, of course they're going to be frustrated.
Yeah, it wasn't anything crazy, but like, it's like you said, I would tell you that if we rewound a few years ago, most of the coverage that we had around the team was like glowingly positive. It was a lot of fan service. That's kind of the diet of stuff that we're used to. And look, like, that's what fans look for nowadays. Like, we love our confirmation bias and we love our team. And so we want you to like go find the thing that's like find the silver lining in these losses. And tell me about that. Give me a character puff piece on Jose or somebody. Make me feel good. We like to feel good. This doesn't make me feel good. But I want to know what's going on. Like, I care about knowing what's going on. I want to find out what I can. Nobody's saying anything. This at least gives us context for, like, where are things right now? They're where you might think based on what's been reported. Like, it's a gray, murky area. It balls in his court and we're just waiting and the team is waiting as well.
Yeah. And like, I think part of this thing too is I think players on the Pelicans are a little frustrated by this series of events too. And you can even take it back to last season. I mean, when it took BI forever to come back with like the hamstring tightness or soreness or whatever they designated it as. CJ made a few comments on the record, like in front of all the microphones, like kind of paraphrasing here, but like he said last year, basically, yeah, I told BI, like, we need him back on the floor. Like, this has been a multi-season issue. This has not even been an issue only this year. This dates back to last season with the amount of time it took him to come back from some stuff. So I think that's kind of why you're seeing this now. And two, I mean, look, not everybody has to behave this way. Like, not like just because some guys on the team play through minor injuries, like, or maybe more than minor injuries, but like play through pain, it doesn't mean that everybody has to, but there are a lot of guys on this team playing through pain right now. You know, like,
does Larry have a functioning shoulder right now?
Yeah. Like, I mean, like, Larry's shoulder, like, he should take more time off. Like, that doesn't look great. Like, I mean, like, Jonas, like, they've tried to make Jonas Valanciunas sit out games and he just refuses to. I mean, CJ played through like sickness earlier in the year, and I'm not saying everybody has to do that and that's the best thing all the time, but I also think there is a recognition from a lot of the, you know, some of the veteran players on this team. Look, some nights you just need to play when you're 90% because this team is really good and you only have so many shots in your career to be a special team. And this could be a special team. There is a recognition among veterans that this could be a special team if, you know, things break right and you do the right things over the course of a season.
Look, the biggest Brandon Ingram fan that I know is friend of the show, Jason Maples. Jason Maples retweeted your article and said that it was completely fair and tossed in an extra statistic that Brandon Ingram has missed one third of his entire NBA career. So if that, you know, I understand we obviously had the blood clot situation that accounts for a lot of those games, but it does not account for a third of his career. And that's just, you know, that's a real number, and it's a legitimate concern, and it's been a pattern. And now we're looking at an extended stay on the bench. That doesn't make any sense. And like, I'm seeing plenty of shoot around videos. I'm watching him pivot on the foot over and over again and making comments to the camera and stuff. And like, he went on record with Cassidy Hubbard and said, you know, he plans on getting back this past week. And then it just didn't happen. You know, there's a lot of reasons to potentially be upset. None of which is like you writing the article that people feel the way that logically they would.
Yeah. And I think the other part of this too is Brandon Ingram, Zion Williamson, and CJ McCollum have played in 10 games together total. Zion was obviously not available last year. They got 10 games at the start of the season. And if you think back to the early part of the season, it didn't look great. And that's okay because it takes time to learn each other's games. Like, that is why you have this 82 game regular season to figure out each other's games and figure out that hierarchy and like learn the nuances of each other's games. Like, I worry that you go into the playoffs and it's a situation where, well, shoot, we've only played 16 total games together. And now we've got to, you know, do this against some really good competition. And we've got to play this team, you know, potentially 5, 6, 7 times in a row. I mean, I just feels like you could be wasting opportunities to learn how to play together. Like, this is what this time is for.
Look, I've pointed at the first year of the LeBron Miami Heat a bunch of times. I just think it's the most poignant example that people will remember of an absurdly talented team that came out the gate and did not look like you expected. They spent half a season gutting out wins by a bucket or two, just playing their ass off on defense, and the offense made no sense. And then they finally figured things out later on in the season and into the playoffs because they played a ton of games together. But it started out the gate, and this has been like every major trio that we've gotten, and some major duos as well. Like, when it starts off rocky, you have to figure out like what everybody likes, what spots they want to get the ball, what percentage of the time you need to give this guy the ball in this matchup, some sort of feel for like who's going off tonight. And so we're gonna increase how much he touches the ball tonight. Like, you got to feel each other out. You got to know where each other's spots are, where you fit in the offense. And we have to figure out like the splits, because you have some roles that overlap with each other, and we want to get you some run with some spacers, and we're not doing any of that. None of that stuff's happening. You know,
yeah, and like
Zion, I mean, got comfortable.
Like, I love Herb Jones, but like, do we even know definitively whether Herb Jones fits in the starting lineup next to those guys? Do we know definitively whether they'd, you know, have to like make a change to get more shooting? I mean, I don't have enough data to answer a lot of these questions.
Right. Yeah. And I think we know that Herb is certainly survivable. We know they could certainly be fine in the regular season putting him out there. What their optimal selves are and what they should be putting out in the playoffs is the thing that you need to be trying to figure out. And we need time to do that. And like, you know, we just started talking about trade chatter. We're getting into trade deadline, your opportunity to improve your roster for this season. Can you make a definitive decision based on not seeing your team play together? Do you really have, like, I start thinking through things like, look, Gary Trent shot the ball 14 or 15 times a game for the last 4 years on the teams that he has been on. He is top three in usage on the Raptors. If I trade for him, does he even, like, if everybody gets healthy, can I even get him 12 shots? Is it worth it to me to get Gary Trent if I'm only going to get him 10 shots? And like, I can't answer those questions because I don't know who the hell's going to play. So like, I look for versatility. If we're going to make any acquisition, I look for versatility because I'm like, okay, at least there's a bunch of different ways I could use this guy. If you're predominantly a volume guy, I don't even know what the hell to do with you here.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And I mean, look, my gut feeling is they need a little more shooting, I think. It doesn't feel like there's quite enough shooting on this team. But at the same time, I can totally understand why the front office would feel like, why would I put first round picks on the table right now? Like, I have no clue what I even have. Like,
I just had to say that.
Yeah, it's like, there's a strong argument for why would we put first round picks on the table when we have no idea what we even have right now? Like, right. Why are we going to push chips in when we have no clue what this looks like when it's completely whole?
Because like, if you think about what our lineup is now, like, we're going, you know, 10, 11, 12 deep on some nights. And if you look at what the playoffs is, it's going to be 8, 9, at most 10. Like, that's what happens in the playoffs. Your roster shrinks. Your rotations shrink. You get people. You start running hardcore offense that relies a lot on ISO, that relies a lot on talent. Because you're seeing the same defense every night and there's a lot more planning involved. Like, you are prepared for by your opponent. You're going to see the same stuff over and over again. So it's like, who can out-talent great defense? I just don't even know, like, space-wise where people fit. So like, when I think about, are you upgrading? I need to know that I'm like definitively upgrading. I don't, like, people are actually on Twitter right now talking about Devontae Graham's minutes. I don't care. I don't care that Devontae Graham played minutes in a game that we got trounced in, because that was not the issue. Nobody could beat a zone. Nobody could beat the zone. Nobody could dribble around the zone. Nobody could pass through it, and nobody could make shots in it. Like, we started getting a little comfortable getting the ball inside. Wasn't the reason. Devontae Graham's probably not going to play in the playoffs. He was a breather guy in the Phoenix series when we didn't have Dyson, when we didn't have Zion. Pretty confident Dyson and Zion are going to play in the playoffs. So yeah. At that point, like, that's just the thing, is like, if you're making an upgrade, it feels like you're making one that you know is sizable. You are supplanting somebody in the starting lineup, or you are definitively improving your secondary rotation for the playoffs. It's not about like, oh, like, I'm trying to improve my Devontae Graham minutes. That's not what we're doing. But again, do you even know?
Yeah, and you don't want to be a theoretical team either. I mean, the Los Angeles Clippers are the great theoretical team. Well, I guess the Brooklyn
theoretical
Nets.
NBA favorites.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the Brooklyn Nets, you know, were kind of in that category for a while too. When, you know, how many games did Harden, Kyrie, and KD end up playing together?
Oh God. Was it? Did they even play 10 before Harden bounced?
Yeah, it was something like that. And I mean, I think part of it went sideways because Harden looked at that and said, oh my gosh, Kyrie's crazy. Like, you know, him not getting vaccinated has kind of screwed up a whole season. But the Clippers are like this too. Like, they're kind of a theoretical team, and got their stars have sat out so many games that it's kind of infected everything else. And that's who they've become. Like, the Clippers don't look like they can win the championship this year right now. I mean, maybe there is an incredible turnaround in there, but I watch them play and I don't think, no, this, like, I don't think this team is a contender. Like, they've just been not whole for so long. I don't think they can just press a button and turn it on and be contenders now.
You made a point earlier. They're the perfect example. You made a point earlier about getting together, playing together, getting continuity, feeling each other out, figuring things out. It does not help when your star players, your two primary stars, where all of your assets and all of your money is tied up, are not playing. Kawhi Leonard missed a lot of time.
Yeah, and Kawhi Leonard, like, people in the league believe his knees basically will never get back to 100%, right? Like, a lot of people in the league believe he has bad knees. And also, he came into the situation having accomplished a lot. Finals MVPs, All-Star games, like, defensive players of the year. You know, when I think when players who have not accomplished nearly as much want similar treatment, then it's like I don't even think the Clippers feel great about giving Kawhi all that power. Like, that was what they had to do to get him. But when you haven't accomplished nearly that much, then what are we even doing here? You know?
Yeah. It's like, it's the same thing as like the Kyrie and KD, like, they kind of run the Nets, like, you know, the Matt Sullivan book and everything. Like, they've relinquished a lot of power to those star players. And if you're the GM of a team that's not staring at championship contention, you do that deal every day and twice on Sunday. Like, you bring the stars because that's how you win in this league. If you don't have stars and stars want to come, you do what you can to get the stars to come. So, like, I get it. And they still make those deals and you hope for the best. But when they don't work out, you might be bent over for years. Like, if it goes bad, you may be looking at 3-4 years of this stuff. But again, everybody we just talked about, all have a championship under their belt, with the exception of Paul George, and have awards all over the place. Like, Kevin Durant and Kawhi Leonard should have that level of input and say about how their bodies are handled. And in Kawhi's case, like, famously needs to have that say because there's a little bit of lack of trust and kind of wants to do things his own way. Like, that's literally how he ends up moving to Toronto and then eventually to LA. But yeah, continuity is a killer even for stars. Show up and play.
You just, over time, you are what you do, basically. Like, you just are what you do. And if you think, well, I don't have to do these things and I can still be great, then that is a very dangerous game to play, in my opinion. Hollinger had a note in his column. I tweeted it out. Basically, if you want to be a legit contender, like, history kind of says, you have to finish with the third seed or higher. Said, historically, the number three seed has been the great dividing line between contender legitimacy and also-ran status. There's a 97% chance the eventual champion will be a top three seed and a 3% chance it will be somebody else. Pelicans are in third place right now.
Not after tonight.
Yeah, I mean, they could drop down to fourth, but like, it's kind of like Denver and Memphis are creating a lot of separation at this top two spots. Even if New Orleans falls out of three, I still think, like, the goal for them should just be, we want home court advantage in the first round of the playoffs. Like, they've shown they're a very good team at Smoothie King Center, incredible fan base right now. Like, use that to your advantage. Like, I feel like if they went into a first round series and they had the home court advantage, like, I mean, obviously I think they would be favored. And like, if it was a 4-5 and they were the five, I wouldn't feel so great about them. They've not had a lot of success on the road this year. Like, to me, that's hugely important, getting the three or the four and like having that home court in the first round.
And look, you know, one of the things coming into the season, like, I have not changed my preseason expectations for this team. Like, I know we see that the defense is better than we expected. I wanted a 50 win team. Like, that was a high outcome for me. Reaching 50 wins is like, holy shit, that's a good season. Getting out, like, for me, the goal, the entire goal for this year was escape the play-in. if you escape the play-in, that's a huge win because you played from the bottom of the play-in into the playoffs, and then like we're feisty in your first round series. The fact that we're talking about the goal being hosting a first round, that's an incredible outcome. You are not likely winning the title this year. Like, just in the normal run of the NBA, when you accumulate talent and they get a chance to play together, this is not how it works. You know, the Memphis Grizzlies didn't win the title last year. Like, that, the young team with the players that you can see the picture, it never catches lightning in a bottle the first season that it comes together. That's not how it works. There's a few rare occurrences where like a major acquisition pushed an already great team even further into greatness and they win. But it is never like your organically built team puts it together that first year they all play together. Like, this isn't the year. It's really about the next 3 years in terms of what is the potential of these guys. But this is the great opportunity for the big first step together. And that's just as important. But at the same time, like, I'm keeping my head about me. Like, I want them. I'm at this in the same place I always was. If they end up higher than four, that's beyond my dreams. You know, if they ended up finishing top three, that is beyond any dream that I had. Their defense is already beyond any dream I was going to have. Most of the outcomes are already at a place that I did not expect. So, you know, now, like, I'm still in the same place. Like, this is going to be bad. Like, set your expectations now. These next few games, we're running up against a bunch of rough teams. It's a lot of road games. It's a lot of back-to-backs. Your stars aren't playing. You are likely to lose a lot of these. You may drop back as far as seventh. The ranking, the season standings are not that far apart.
Yeah.
But the back end of your schedule is a little more favorable. So, like, this is how basketball works. You know, teams get like, this is the time where like we'll catch all the criticism. And we'll be like, oh, the Pelicans suck. And then people will come back. And then at the end of the season, when they're playing an easier part of the schedule and they put a run together, like, oh my God, the Pelicans are amazing. They're getting hot at the right time. Like, this is what we do. You know, like, Memphis has been great. Every time I turn around, Memphis is playing against a team that is missing a star. Every time something turns around, like, Donovan Mitchell didn't play tonight. They beat Cleveland on a Steven Adams game winner. Like, every time I turn around, they're playing against somebody that's like missing a star or two. And I'm like, damn it. Can that happen for me? I want that. But like, that's kind of how this stuff works. Like, we're in the dip. This is a foreseeable dip because of the people that are missing, because of where we are in the schedule. We have the opportunity to get out of it, but you don't want to dig the hole too deep. Like, this is why I said 500 ball was what I was hoping for going into the stretch. 3-7 so far, but you beat the bad teams. So there were six wins available against bad teams. So far, they've beaten the bad teams. You still need to steal a couple from some good teams. CJ has given you enough. Hasn't been enough firepower otherwise.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I mean, I think for me, I just don't want to see them waste any opportunities because so many stars have aligned to make this, you know, potentially so much fun. And it has been very fun this year, but like so many stars aligned for the potential for this to be special. I mean, like, think about how this team came together. Brandon Ingram came here because the Pelicans were lucky enough to get the number one pick, which became Anthony Davis, who was a very good player whom you traded. And then they paired him with a star running mate, by also getting lucky enough to get the number one pick in Zion Williamson. Those two things helped convince CJ McCollum, well, shoot, I'll spend the back half of my career here. Like, there was a lot of skill in roster building from Griffin, all those guys, especially with, like, you know, your Jose's, your Najee's, but like, there's also a lot of luck involved too. Like, a lot of stuff had to go right. There is a real 3-year window where Zion's, Ingram's and McCollum's contracts are all aligned and you've got, you know, a lot of good complementary pieces in place. Do not waste this. That's all I'm saying.
I don't really have anything else to add. We're in a place that I expected. I don't expect CJ and JV to go out there and win a game for you by themselves that often against great teams. And I know, every, you know, Miami was healthy. Miami's played together for a really long time for a coach that has been coaching them for a long time, and they've experienced a lot of success. You're yeah. coming off of a huge road trip. You're about to go back on a road trip. Like, this is not a fun game. This is a you need all your weapons game, and you didn't have them. So you went in there with a pea shooter and you got blown up with a bazooka. It just sometimes this is how things are scheduled.
I'm such a Jimmy Butler guy. I love Jimmy Butler so much.
You're all those like grindy tough guys. You like your point guards and stuff too. You like all the gritty shitty dudes. That's your MO.
I like winning players. What can I say?
Hey,
I like winners.
You're a fan of Pat Beverly. All right. Yeah. So I don't want to hear that it's just winners.
Did Pat Beverly help the Minnesota Timberwolves?
How is he doing for the Lakers? Did he bring the winning culture to the Lakers?
Don't put that on Pat Bev, man. Don't put that on him. Yeah, it hasn't gone well.
I'll give him that he's a tryhard and that he brings an unquestionable amount of energy and effort. I just also think that he gets rewarded with a just absolutely ridiculous. Like, may as well be carrying weaponry on the floor whistle. He gets to do whatever the hell he wants before they call the foul. Because they're like, oh, I'm going to call four on him at some point tonight. Well, that one's fine. Like, I'll let these three go. Those weren't even that bad for Pat Bev. Like, he didn't punch him in the face. It's nothing. Like, he just, I can't stand watching those guys. But if he played for me, then I'd probably love him. But he doesn't play for me. So screw that guy.
I think I love watching those guys because I kind of was one of those guys. I was a pretty big jerk.
I had quite the feeling that was the thing, because there was a very clear through line when you were professing like who you liked. I'm like, I keep seeing the same thing here. Guy who's on ball that's a real asshole on the defensive end. I just keep seeing it over and over again.
Oh. Yeah, well, I was a little predisposed to liking Jose Alvarado. What can I say?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and there you have the size as well. Like all of the things coming together. Good
yep.
stuff.
I've got a type and it's assholes.
Don't we all? Don't we? Whoa. Heard that, folks? He's got a type and it's assholes. From the wing after dark. anyway. What else do we need to talk about? There's nothing more to talk about with the Miami game. Like, it's a, whoa. Do we have anything we need to talk about? Like, going into the road trip, we have an opportunity for a practice tomorrow. So like, we're looking out tomorrow. Like, maybe what are our next practice opportunities for BI? We have one tomorrow.
Yeah. They've officially said there's no practice. I still think guys will be getting in the gym. I just think it's not going to be open to the media.
No formal practice.
Got yeah, it. And I think, honestly, our large part of that is all the beat guys are flying out early in the morning before practice. I don't know. We'll see. I don't want to even speculate on it.
I told people I'm going to start handling it with like a DEFCON rating as to like, how close are we to BI playing again? I don't have a great way to do it. So I'm just going to start moving from DEFCON level 1 to 4.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know how else to handle it.
I honestly have no idea. I mean, it's kind of just up to him, you know?
I think you know, they're not going to really just needs to be said.
Yeah, they're not going to just throw him into a game. Like, they're going to at least be like you got to go through a full practice and you got to do that. Like, there's a couple hoops he's got to jump through, right. But it's pretty much on him. And, man, he's so good at basketball. I'd like to see it again. His first round series against the Suns and what he was able to do in those play-in tournament games was just like ridiculous, preposterous stuff. I mean, he's made himself into such a good all-around player. Ready to see him hoop again.
I would like to see his absolutely indefensible jump shot be fired in our jersey again. We need it. We need it real bad. And I need his three-point shooting. We were already desperate for it, and I think it just like made it even more clear why we need his volume after he went out. And it's just like, you know, it's the excitement of the possibilities. Like, we know how much talent that is. Do we have any feeling? So like switching gears to Zion, I know what we're due for his next checkup is scheduled for this week. I think it's the 24th was the date we were given.
Yeah, I think it's like 6 days from now and we're recording late Wednesday night. Yeah,
so next week,
the 24th is officially 3 weeks from when they said he'll be reevaluated in 3 weeks.
And I think we've seen,
I think Woj said that, you know, like Woj is pretty plugged in with the Zion camp and CAA, mm-hmm. et cetera. I think he said it, probably a month long absence at least. So.
Yeah. I remember when he said that right out the gate, but it does seem like this has been a different kind of injury thing. Like I know famously in the past, injuries have gotten him down and it has been really hard to do cardio and whatnot. And it's has not looked like that this time. You know, I've seen workout footage of him doing really hard upper body cardio and stuff. Looks to have been in great spirits on road trips and everything, like shaking hands and kissing babies at away games. It's felt a lot better, like at least from an outsider's yeah. perspective. It feels completely different. And it almost has me sitting there like, oh, formality. As soon as he's ready to go, he's back. Like I don't have that lingering fear that I've had with him and injuries in the past. I just kind of feel
I don't either.
Waiting the timeline.
I don't either. I mean, it's you're right. It has been a much different feel, you know, him out versus any time he was previously out with the Pelicans. You know, hamstrings are really tough, especially for someone as explosive as him. You know, like the worst thing he could do is come back too early and like re-injure the hamstring or anything like that. Right. But it does seem like it's gone well. And I think he wants to play in the All-Star game. Like, I think that would mean something to him. You know, we've talked about like he has a lot to gain financially if he's able to make first team All-NBA. His starting salary next year would be 30% of the cap if he makes first team All-NBA. If he makes second team, third team, doesn't make an All-NBA team, 25% of the salary cap. That's a pretty significant difference there. So I think he's got a lot of reasons to want to get back on the court. And I think the biggest reason is Zion is having fun this year. He loves winning, and they've been winning.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't think he is ignorant to the fact that a lot of voters have a games played cap on their votes. They start off with like, has player X played 50 games? If not, will not vote for them. That's how this can go. You know, like Stan Van Gundy did that on Twitter the other day. Everybody lost their minds. And he just set like a minimum threshold for how many games played, which by the way, greatest NBA thing on Twitter. I'm sure you saw it. Stan went on a rant about old school basketball and Kevin Durant agreed with him and said, man, Stan be spitting. And Stan Van Gundy did not understand and went on as if KD contradicted him. And like,
yeah, Stan thought that KD was disagreeing with him when in fact KD was agreeing with him. And that explained a whole lot right there,
man. Stan be spitting. He didn't understand that. Chances are that's why he didn't understand the damn Pelicans. He comes back and some random AVI account goes, Stan, that means you're speaking facts. And he's like, oh, wow, no idea. Had no idea.
Oh, man.
Stan and his plain Lays and his unflavored popcorn. He just, what a guy. What a guy. Oh, man.
All right. Well, I don't have any more notes from this Heat game.
Nothing else?
No. I don't really have any notes.
Who are you gonna kill in your write up tomorrow? Who are you gonna murder next?
Oh, there's still
blood
God.
On the floor. Is the body even cold?
Just exhausting. You know what? Last thing before we get out of here. You know what annoyed me is I muted the tweet because I was just like, I can't look at this anymore. And then people kept sending me their replies. And when I was at the game tonight, somebody showed me like a reply. And I was like, do you think I want to see this? Like just people saying they hate me. Like come on.
This is why I only did it once. And I did it immediately after it went up. And I said, I'm only going to do this once. And I stuck to that because I'm like, the first question I asked you is like, okay, how are you going to approach this? You know, this is going to get a bunch of negativity. Like, I woke up that morning, I'm like, this man and the BI stands are going to have some fun today. And it got ugly quick. And I'm like, all right, what do? You just mute the tweet? Do you mute the accounts? Do you like, what's the approach here? Because I'm curious, because I don't write anything that gets attention from anybody other than apparently Eddie Johnson. but for whatever reason, like you're going into the depths here. So I'm like, what do we do? So I was like, you know, I do have this one that bothers me, but I will make sure to say I will not send you more of these, because clearly you have a strategy not to read them all day. And I'm going to respect that. I almost wish that a fan like printed one out on a poster board and brought it to the game to be like, Christian, you see this?
Yeah. My favorite tweet from last year when I was going pretty hard in the paint about the Zion stuff was somebody tweeted Christian Clark is the ops. That one really made me laugh. And it wasn't even my at. They like just spelled out my full name. So that one really made me laugh.
Hey, you know, normally when you don't see, I feel weird about the at thing. Cause like some people feel like if you're talking shit, you're supposed to just at the person so that they can go find it or whatever. But like, I think it's super tacky when it's like celebrities or players or stuff. Like, you don't know me. You don't give a shit what I say. Like, I'm just writing a tweet. You don't care. The only person that actually cares is like Kevin Durant, who will show up randomly and berate you or troll you and tell you why you suck at life for sport. But yeah, I don't get the ad. Interesting. I'm debating, like, did he spell out Christian Clark because he didn't want you to find it or because he did want you to find it?
I don't know. If you were Christian Clark as the ops person, please let us know.
Yeah, please write into the show. Our DMs are open. Let us know. Yeah, dude, I can't imagine. Look, I will say one thing and then we can get out of here. A lot of people enjoy being mad online every day, like for fun. I obviously have a day job where I need to be careful about how I carry myself, say on here. Because it could potentially affect my day job the same way that you have to carry yourself with a level of professionalism, because everything you do ripples in your day job. A lot of people don't have that because they're just like hiding behind like a crude picture of like the Batman logo with like, you know, Tommy 65403953 and just go, you know, rant and say whatever they want. I have to say that even me, who like, I don't, you can go check my timeline. You will not find very many Twitter beefs on my timeline. Even I, like when I'm reading the feedback, like I'm getting fired up for you when I'm reading some of it. And I'm like, I need to put this away because I can't say anything either. And I really, really want to, because I just want to get in there and go be troll guy and be like, can you guys please, like, can we return to a place where there's like a level of respect for actual journalist, actual newspaper, because like there's a level of credibility there that still exists. I know we've done everything in this country to try and make it not have any credibility, but it still does. Those people are slightly different. They were raised to find two sources and understand what primary sourcing is and to not report things that are made up. Like, we just go straight to like, it's an opinion piece. He made it up.
Well, Adam, When I hang up the laptop and I move to Puerto Rico to be a bartender, maybe I'll just spend one afternoon and reply to all these nerds.
Christian, did you just start the plot? Did you start writing the screenplay for Cocktail 2?
Yeah.
I think
you did. Yeah.
A cocktail. Hey, look, Tom Cruise is big into making reboots of movies that are 30 years old. I think he'd go for it. It's Puerto Rico instead of Jamaica, but like, look, hey, we can do it. And then we can go, what, we can't open the bar in the mall this time, so where do we put a bar that's really strange, that it's not bar in an office building? There you go, bar in a giant multi-use office building, middle of the day, cranking out drinks in between the stock markets flying up, flying down. Look at that. We just wrote Cocktail 2. You're welcome, folks.
I'll give you some more notes on that script this summer.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's write this bad boy up.
All right, guys. Well, I will be going to Orlando, going to Miami. I think we will do a pod probably after the second Miami game. But as always, appreciate you guys for listening, and we'll talk to you again soon.
After Miami. Well, enjoy Paolo.
It'll be great.